So his first section here is, he calls it the contemporary debate over good and evil. And he says, since 1955 and the publication of the seminal article entitled Evil and Omnipotence by the respected philosopher J.L. Mackey, the problem of evil, he says, has been a mainstay of philosophical discourse, right? So this is one of the issues that philosophy, continues to debate over and write people write papers, books, right? That sort of thing. Right. And he says that the position, the perspective that Mackey led us to, he says, to deal with in terms of this problem is known as the logical problem of mm-hmm. evil, right? So that portends, that hints at that there's more than one kind of problem of evil, right?
Right, and we'll cover a little bit in there as well. So here's kind of the argument laid out with some of the hidden assumptions here that are fleshed out a bit more that we want to understand because the idea that from the premises the conclusion should follow for it to be a sound argument. You might disagree with the premises, but if you can really spell out what you want in your premise, if those things lend well to a proper argumentation, the therefore should be just assumed to be correct, logically follows.
We say in a well-structured argument, premises give good reasons to believe that the conclusion is true. They support the conclusion.
Right. So it could be wrong, the premises. So, it's wet outside therefore is raining is my conclusion. Right. So it could be it's raining outside. If it's raining outside, it's likely that it's raining, therefore it's raining. So it's wet outside, so something along those lines. Well, it could be the sprinkler's on. So that could be one of the kind of the hidden premises there. But here's Mackey's kind of laid out argumentation. So the first one is that an omnipotent God can prevent evil. So he's all powerful. Can he prevent evil? An omnibenevolent God, so a God that's all good, wants to prevent evil. The third premise is that evil exists. Okay. And this leads to the following conclusion. This leads to the conclusion that therefore either God is not omnipotent, he's not all powerful, he cannot prevent evil, or he's not omnibenevolent, he will not prevent evil, or he's not all good. And this leads therefore to the final conclusion, therefore God does not exist. So really evil existing is kind of a key component within that we could probably kind of center that type of argument on, and we can argue about the tops and the bottoms below that.
But. Yeah, so notice here, this is kind of an attack on the character of God, right? We're looking at the fact that at least the Christian God, the biblical God, is all-powerful, omnipotent, and all-good, omnibenevolent. And if he is all-powerful, then, he could prevent evil, right? If he's all good, he would want to prevent evil, so says the argument. But evil exists. So one of these two, the argument goes, has to be wrong. Either he's not all-powerful, and so he can't prevent evil, or he's not all good, and therefore, he doesn't want to prevent evil, right? Or the third option is the Christian God, the biblical God, doesn't even exist, mm-hmm. right? A God that's like this, all powerful and all good, doesn't exist. So that's the idea here. Right?
And one of the good things that this argument does from the other side, from the atheist point of view, is you don't even have to argue what will probably be a kind of a stick in the mud issue, which is, well, you have to first prove that God exists in order for it to happen. In this argumentation, you're granting, okay, it may be possible that your God exists. Here's still some problems that we have with that. And so this kind of moves the conversation a little bit more forward. It kind of grants the idea, okay, God exists, but here are some components that you say that God has some qualities. Therefore, it still doesn't seem like God would exist because of this. Or he's not the God that you're claiming to exist.
Exactly. Right. And so, maybe premise two is true and premise one is false, we could say. And, And in that case, God sincerely desires to prevent evil, right? He's good, but he simply is not able to, or he lacks the power to prevent or stop evil. Now, notice, if this is true, then it would contradict the Christian belief that God has the requisite power to do all that is logically possible for him to do. And there seems to be no logical reason why such a God could not prevent evil, right? And I just want to focus here real briefly on this idea of God being all powerful has to do with he's able to do what is logically possible right. for him to do, right? There are some things that even an all powerful God cannot do, right? In fact, the scripture says he can't lie,
right?
So he can't go against his character, his nature, right? Mm-hmm. He can't do things that are meaningless, like make square circles, right?
Make a God more powerful than he is.
But, you know, he has the power, according to, you know, this position, to do all that is logically possible for him to do. And so this seems to thwart this particular argument, seems to go against that, or at least say that he doesn't exist, right? And
ironic that it comes from a rabbi, Rabbi Kushner.
Yeah, this is the one that Kushner used in his When Bad Things Happen to Good People, right? He, you know, he argued that, you know, God really wants good things to happen, but he's not strong enough to do it, right, kind of thing.
He just needs to cross his fingers a little bit more to make it out of there.
Yeah.
All right, so what's something else here? So perhaps premise one is true, but while premise two is false. So premise one is that, okay, there's an omnipotent God that can prevent evil, but an omnibenevolent God may not want to prevent evil. Maybe that's what we're talking about here. Well, there are two ways to read this. Well, first, perhaps God is not omnibenevolent. Maybe he's not all-loving. Well, if that's true, then it renders the God of the Bible non-existent, right? So that's God is love. It's almost an A equals A, not quite, but, you know, we're understanding the type of language that is there.
It's the not law of identity is what that one is called. Right. Yeah.
It's not he's not only all love, and so you're kind of not adding nothing to the conversation. You're expressing a quality of that. So maybe that's not maybe that's the case. Is that just the God of the Bible doesn't exist? You're just talking about some other God that can create things, and evil just happens to be in his maniacal plan or whatever it might be. The second way to read this is to reject the assumption expressed in the second part of the premise too, which is although God is all good and abhors all evil, we have to ask: is it true that he wants to prevent every instance of evil? So that's quite an interesting question that philosophers have kind of honed in on, and so we'll kind of talk about that here.
Yeah, so notice there is an internal inconsistency in how the premise is stated on this one, right? God being all good may have good reasons for permitting evil, right? So in that case, he doesn't want to prevent evil, right? And so this is where the heart of the response to Hume, Mackey, and others has resided. For instance, Ronald Nash clarifies the matter. Most attempts, Nash tells us, to answer the problem of evil are variations of a basic theme, namely this, that God permits evil either to make possible some greater good or to avoid some greater evil, right? So notice there's a kind of a hidden assumption here in, you know, if it exists, and maybe, you know, he doesn't want to get rid of it. And, okay, well, so this particular response is, yeah, let's accept that. Maybe he doesn't, right? And if that's the case, then maybe he has a greater good that he's accomplishing through the evil, or he's avoiding some even greater evil, right, that he's accomplished, and so he allows this particular evil. Right?
One of the great story ideas for time travel is, do you go back in time and kill baby Hitler?
Yeah.
And you stop everything, but you have to kill a baby, and it's Hitler. Well, what if God killing children, all those babies that he's preventing from living, are the next Hitlers, the next Maos, the next Stalins? How do we know that that's not the case? Maybe this is the case.
There's the hidden
assumptions right there. As we cry over the death of all sorts of people, but maybe they have a greater evil that lies beyond that second of life right before death.
Yeah.
So there are, as we talked about, kind of these different problems for evil. And so the one that we covered for Mackey was the logical problem of evil. And so that's kind of the classical argument against God from evil. And as we said, that was Mackey's. But there are certain other ones. So Alvin Plantinga, who's kind of probably one of the most well-known, well-respected from every side, a Christian philosopher in our day. He kind of sought to answer Mackey's challenge in his 1967 book, A God and Other Minds. Mm. And so there he reintroduces the argument representing an earlier thought of Christian thinkers like Augustine here. And Augustine wrote back in the 300s and the 400s. And we called this the kind of the free will defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Plantinga's argument, Christian tells us, has proven so influential and successful that most philosophers, you know, they no longer seek to use a logical problem of evil in seeking to disprove the existence of God. So imagine that. So he has dealt with this problem so effectively, right, that they have backed away from this logical problem. You know, the idea here is that what Plantinga shows is that it is logically compatible that a good, all-powerful God can still exist with evil, right? Especially if, you know, he is getting something good out of it, right? And so Plantinga shows that in his particular argument, and so people have backed away from this particular argument. Plantinga is, by the way, he's still around. I think he's teaching in Grand Rapids at Calvin University, I think is now what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.